All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend editions of the KE Report. Now shifting our focus exclusively to the energy sectors. We're chatting with Dan Steffens. Dan is the president of the Energy Prospectus Group. And Dan, we're going to be talking nat gas prices that continue to drift lower, oil markets that continue to be pretty boring with what seems to be a bias to the downside, and a few companies with recently closed acquisitions that you see as good opportunities, even in this environment with slightly falling energy prices. I really want to start with natural gas. Natural gas has been falling pretty much all through July and now all through August. A lot of the data that I am seeing is saying that demand is okay, but supply just keeps outpacing demand. Curious to see what you're seeing in the nat gas market and why the weakness, again, in the last month and a half is still continuing.
Well, you guys are up there in Vancouver, so you don't know what a hot summer's like. Anyway, so last July, the previous July, we had like 18 days over 100 in July. It was hot. It wasn't never rained, you know, a couple of rain. This year, I don't think July we had one day over 100. If it was just for a couple hours or something. But we've been getting pretty consistent rain all the way through January or through July and August. I mean, it's like every other day we're having thunderstorms, and that keeps it cooler than normal. So that's lowered, you know, electricity demand for your air conditioners. But anyway, so the thing to remember is we have two peak periods of demand. There's one in the summer and there's one in the winter. The one in the summer is for electricity demand. But so whenever you have, you know, storage builds, you know, bigger than normal, or draws, you know, smaller than normal in the winter, you're going to get an impact on the gas price during those peak demand periods. And that's what you have. And so what that does is that impacts the front of the curve. And so the price you see at is the front month NYMEX contract, which happens to be September. So right now we have storage of like almost 200 BCF above the five-year average, which sounds like a lot, but it's, you know, storage holds over 4.2 trillion capacity. And so if you have at this time of the year, when you're just a few months away from the starting of the winter, if you're above normal in storage, then the utility companies don't want to take physical supply because they have to pay storage fees on it. So you don't have them buy it. And on the reverse of that, some of the biggest price spikes ever in the last 25 years, the biggest price spikes have happened in the summer months in the third quarter. And because that's when they feel they don't have enough gas in storage, and then you'll get a bidding war for physical supply in the NYMEX contract. But when you look at the fundamentals for the future of gas, especially in the next 18 months even, it looks very bullish for natural gas. In fact, EIA, in their short-term energy outlook Steno report for August, which came out about 10 days ago or so, they are saying their forecast is that natural gas will be $5.40 per MMBTU by December of 2026. So that's what, 15, 18 months away. But, and the reason why is because you got all these LNG export facilities coming online. Like I'm looking at a chart right now that's from Range Resources, has some really good slides on there. And LNG exports are supposed to ramp up over the next 5 years by 13 BCF a day. So they're going to go from about 15, you know, BCF a day to 27, 28 BCF a day by 2030. And in addition to that, you've got exports by pipeline to Mexico going up, which is going into their LNG export facility. And then you've got demand for electricity by these AI data centers is really going to start ramping up when we get near the end of 2026. A lot of the AI data centers are actually being built in the basins themselves because they don't trust the grid. So they're going to set up their own natural gas fired power plants. But the demand, we got to add at least. And then another thing is, you got to remember that all oil wells, all natural gas wells are all always declining. So it's not like the gas wells that are producing today, 5 years from now, will not be producing nearly as much gas. So not only do you have to find the gas to fill the gap of 20 BCF increase in demand, you've got to replace the gas of the declining wells itself. So you got to spend a lot more money drilling more wells, more infrastructure and stuff like that. But the main reason it's going to be really difficult to meet the demand by the end of 2026 is because of lack of infrastructure. The pipelines are pretty much full. The reason that gas prices are so low in the Permian Basin is there's no pipeline capacity left. And so, they don't have any leverage because their pipes are all full. And then the only area that really has a lot of upside near term and can get gas to the LNG exporters along the Gulf is the Haynesville. And that's in South Louisiana, East Texas is the Haynesville. And those wells come on really strong, but they've got direct access to some of those big LNG export facilities. So anyway, it's just all, but right now the price is down because where the storage is higher than normal.
So Dan, I want to follow up quickly on that nat gas data, what the EIA had to say, because look, in the long term, fine, 18 months out, prices might be a whole lot higher, but when could the trend change? Because a lot of the data that I saw in that report is that they say demand remained decent, up 1.3% year over year in the US, but they're also estimating that demand growth could turn negative in early 2026. So let's say 6 months out. And they also pointed to the supply side where US gas rigs are up 25% year over year. And there's typically a lag between rig counts when those move higher and nat gas production when that moves higher. So if we're trying to time this market for a good entry into either buying nat gas or buying any of the companies, it's nice to not buy when the market is still falling. So is this a story where we need to revisit it in early 2026, where the data, it seems like from the EIA saying, could get even worse before a turn in the market? So maybe the stocks follow the market lower until that time?
Well, right now you're looking at the front month contract is September. So I think when we get to the end of the month, the end of August, we'll go to the October comp deal. And so see, if you're the owner, the long on a September contract and you hold to the end, you have to take physical supply of that gas and you're going to start getting billed for storage fees. But as we get closer to the winter and October, November, December become the front months, then you don't care because it'll go right into the market. I mean, then when you get to the mid-November, demand for gas is going to exceed supply and the storage is going to start going down. So you're going to have rising prices at the front of the strip as you just get closer to December. And then I think the January is already in the high threes. It's close to $4 right now. It was over $5. So I think the prices will just start inching up, just seasonally inch up anyway. And then it's all up to the, what's the winter weather like? If you have a cold December, 200 BCF more or less in storage can be totally wiped out in 1 week and a cold week in the winter. I mean, we have storage draws that are like, there's been storage draws of 300 BCF in a week. So that excess is not that much. Now, if we have another really mild winter like we had, not the last one, with the previous one to that, yeah, that could be a problem. But if we just have a normal winter, everything's going to kind of take care of itself. And we do have, there's several big LNG export facilities coming online here. Golden Pass is going to ramp up. It's a big one. Plaquemines is going to double up here pretty soon. I think just in the last couple months, few months, we're going to add like 3.5 BCF per day of export capacities because we're going to be up to 20 BCF per day pretty quick. Anyway.
Well, all right, Dan. So I guess in summary, in the short term, not a lot of impetus for the gas price to go higher. But when you look out 18 months to next winter, you have a confluence of events from the demand from AI data centers starting to like come on with the nat gas plants. You've got the LNG terminals, you've got declining rates that'll not be as strong next year as this year in the nat gas sector. And then you also have the infrastructure limitations as far as not being able to ramp up fast enough. So looking at higher gas prices a little further afield, but maybe not so exciting in the near term. Let's shift over to oil, though. Oil's been pretty boring and range bound with a slight bias to the downside. Do you think that geopolitics is playing in here? Do you think it's more of a trying to keep the fuel prices low for inflation? How do you read the oil market and the weakness we've seen, Dan?
I truly think there's a lot of political forces at play doing all they can to keep the transportation fuel prices down because the Wall Street gang and the Trump team, they want the Fed to lower interest rates. And the Fed's only going to lower interest rates if they believe that inflation is not a threat. if that inflation's under control. Well, the only way you can really control inflation is to keep transportation fuels low for as long as you can. So they're talking it down. And then you've got IEA and EIA putting out these forecasts of why they think, oil could dip below 50. And I'll tell you one thing, if oil prices drop below 50 for any length of time, you will see the upstream companies just absolutely slam the brakes on their drilling programs. They'll just shut down and they're not going to keep drilling these high rate wells that come on real strong and then want to produce that flush production up front into cheap gas oil prices. So they won't. And even these guys like Diamondback, so much of their really good tier one acreage is all held by production already. So they don't have lease expirations as a gun to their head to have to drill a bunch of wells. So, but anyway, I mean, there's no glut at all. I mean, just the report that came out on Wednesday from EIA, or U.S. crude oil inventories are 6% below normal. U.S. distillate inventories, which are diesel, which is a big transportation fuel, is down 13%. The refineries are running at close to 97% capacity. I can't remember seeing them that high ever, hardly. And it's because, refining margins are really high. The refiners should be doing really well because diesel prices stay high because there's diesel shortages all over the place. And then with the big geopolitical question right now is, what the hell's going to happen with the Ukraine war? Personally, I can't see that war ending like this weekend or anything. But then what's Trump going to do? Will he then agree to drop all sanctions against Russian oil? And then will that even make a big difference? Because everybody knows that China and India are buying every dollar of cheap Russian oil they could possibly get. So I don't really see, even if you drop the sanctions, is a bunch of new Russian oil going to hit the market? And their infrastructure's been damaged during the war because I think Ukraine's been able to get drone attacks on some of their infrastructure over there. So I don't see that really being that big of an issue. But now if Putin, is just playing around and he's not serious about ending the war, then I do think Trump's going to put secondary sanctions on especially India and tell them, okay, if you don't stop buying Russian oil, we're going to jack up your tariffs to 50 or 60% or something, then they're going to have to. And then that would cause a big spike up in oil prices, I think. So, just a lot of geopolitical forces right now. But as far as supply and demand, there's no glut of oil and petroleum products anywhere in the world that we see yet. There's a lot of talk about the OPEC plus raising their quotas. Remember, they raised their quotas. They didn't raise their production that much. A lot of the OPEC countries can't produce up to their quotas anyway. The only country with significant supply potential increase is Saudi Arabia.
Dan, I appreciate you breaking down the macro forces for both the nat gas and the oil markets. Let's pivot over to some of the energy companies, though. I know a lot of people listening appreciate getting your thoughts on the individual stocks. And we got a couple of different companies to discuss that have had, I guess, transformative acquisitions. And one of the companies we actually just had on the show earlier in the week was Implay Oil, traded on the TSX under the ticker IPO and on the OTCQX under the ticker IPOOF. And we had Doug Bartolion, the president and CEO of Implay, and we were discussing how they were already a solid company in the Pembina area of Alberta before the acquisition. But since they picked up these properties from Obsidian, they've really hit the gas pedal, no pun intended. So walk us through the value proposition for Implay Oil.
Well, first, let me say I do own the stock. I have about 7,000 shares of Implay. I have been investing with Doug Bartoli and his team for over 15 years. I was back, what was the, I can't remember the other company before that, but this is like the third or fourth go around for that team with public companies. And the other ones, they sold at pretty big gains. But I will tell you, I've never seen Doug this bullish about where he stands right now. He feels very, very good about the deal. And obviously, with their second quarter results coming in way above their guidance, that was great. The thing that really caught my eye in this, so when they took over the property, there was like seven wells that had been drilled that hadn't been completed, and the in-play guys completed those wells. Two of those wells are in the top three best wells in the entire Pembina play, which is hundreds of wells. Okay. And those wells paid out, when oil was averaging maybe like 65, they paid out in 90 days. These are like $3 million wells that paid out in like 90 days. And on the average Pembina Cardium well, horizontal well, I think he's doing 1.5 mile laterals, some 2 mile long laterals. Those 1.5 mile laterals, according to the average type curve of how they come on and what rates they come on at, $65 oil, they pay out in 1.5 years anyway, which is incredible. I mean, that's your turning your, your rate of return then is really good, because they don't just stop producing at 1.5 years. They're still producing pretty strong at 1.5 years. So you get a lot of profit off of that. Well, so it looks really good. I mean, the stock closed, it's up since he announced the second quarter results. The stock has gotten a lot of attention, but just the acquisition itself brought a lot of attention to it. And it's up 11.6% year to date as of the August 19th close, but it's still well below the 52-week high. And I'll tell you, the company's in much, much better shape than when it hit that high. So my current valuation is $18 a stock, Canadian per share, and it pays monthly dividends of 9 cents Canadian. That's $1.08 Canadian per year. That annualized yield then is 9.8%. You can tell if you go look at their recent presentation or everything, he definitely is going to keep paying those dividends, wants to. I mean, there's never any guarantee on dividends, but I mean, I obviously, if oil price went to 40 or something, he'd stop paying dividends. But everything looks like they're going to keep paying those monthly dividends, which I like. The stock has, I have owned this stock for like 10 years, and it's been in our high yield growth portfolio for a long time, and it wasn't paying dividends. So then when he started paying dividends, the price went way up, and it's been a really good stock for us to own. And just going, but so you get high dividend yield, but I think there's a huge upside in it. Now the big thing is with this one is the news that Delek Group bought the seller of those assets got some stock, and they sold all their stock to the Delek Group. And if you're not familiar, if your listeners have, just Google Delek Group Limited, and you'll see how big of a company this is. But they own 32.7% of the common stock of InPlay now, and I cannot emphasize how important it is to have a investor of that quality, because they don't invest in these companies unless they really see the upside to them, and also they are going to support their growth, and they have a very strong track record of taking their investments and maximizing those companies and building shareholder wealth. So I think that's a big deal. But InPlay all by itself, they don't even have to make any more acquisitions. They have a tremendous amount of running room. They have over 400 horizontal developed drilling locations in the Cardium zone within that Pembina play. And where's it? They have another one. I can't think of it right now. But anyway, they just got a lot of running room, and it's in their core areas. They know that area. It isn't like they're going into a brand new area, and they already have operations in there. So they're gonna get a lot of savings on synergies, because they didn't have to add a bunch of people. I think when you interviewed him, he made a big point of that. And anyway, the outlook looks good. And if those next five wells are really good, their fourth quarter results going to be way above what their current forecast is, their production forecast is.
So, Dan, I'm curious on the valuation here, because your valuation, $18 per share, stock right around, let's say, $11. Current market cap, $305 million. The Q2 results were a little over 20,000 BOE a day. The company's forecasting Q3 and Q4 right around 20,000 BOE a day, slightly under that. And Doug was on the show saying that the company's very focused on paying back debt right now. They don't have a huge drill program. I think it was net 5.5 wells that they're planning for the rest of this year. And he really focused on growth through M&A in the future. So with your valuation target of $18, when does that kick in, and what other companies can we compare InPlay to that are right around, at least for this year, 20,000 BOE a day, and what's their market caps?
Well, my valuation is only 4 times 2025 and 2026, my forecast of operating cash flow. They're going to generate over $4 operating cash flow this year, $4 per share, $4 per share, actually $104 million, $105 million of that's compares to his CapEx budget is only 56. So he's generating a ton of free cash flow. Let me tell you something about Doug, and I've known him for a long time. He hates debt. He is not going to go out there and try to build this company by, he wants to really pay this debt down. And so I think they're going to drill these five wells. Then I don't really see them doing much until after spring breakup in 2026. And then just depending, if the oil price kind of gets back and it firms up above 65 or something, I think he'll get pretty active drilling a lot more wells. But, during these periods, there surely is going to be a lot of M&A opportunity for them, and especially if in that their core areas, if they can, fill in some open acreage there and stuff like that. But I mean, he really doesn't have to, but I think that's a quicker way to build the base of the company. And I think Delek's going to have a couple seats on the board, and they're probably going to have a lot to say with what they do. But I mean, if they're going to really back this company financially, they could grow really fast. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if InPlay Oil goes out there on the acquisition front and keeps pressing the gas pedal, and if Delek, like you say, being on the board and coming in as a strategic partner, if they encourage them to maybe grow more through acquisition than even through the drill bit. So we will see how it goes, but definitely a strong company setting up for a strong year, but also a strong next year. And sticking with the theme of strong M&A, let's talk about another company on the list here, Dan, and that's Riley Exploration Permian. Traded on the NYSE under the ticker REPX. They had a transformative acquisition themselves that just closed on July the 1st, the summer of Silverback, and that added in a big part of oil production to the mix and also made them a stronger company. A lot of these companies, when they do the M&A, the first quarter or two, the market's not properly valuing in how strong they've just become pro forma. So walk us through the value proposition in Riley Exploration Permian.
Yeah, we added Riley Exploration Permian to our first to our small cap growth portfolio 7 years ago, and now it has moved in. Well, it still is. It's my number one pick for growth and income in the small cap growth portfolio. They're a bigger company from a production standpoint, but by year end, they're going to be about 40,000 BOE per day of production. But the Silverback, we just saw InPlay had a big jump in its share price when they announced the first full quarter after their acquisition. Well, Riley's going to be the same way when they announce their third quarter results. It's going to be the first full quarter, and they've also had some weather-related issues. Their production was down a little bit, so they're going to announce a big increase in their production from the second quarter to the third quarter, probably about 5,800 barrels a day, with 2,300 barrels of oil per day from second quarter to third quarter. So going to about, I think, 35,000 now, but by year end, they're going to be at 40,000 BOE per day. So, pretty decent company. Now, the thing is, where they are in West Texas, they're out there in very West Texas and in New Mexico. They got two core areas. One's in Texas, it's right on the New Mexico border, and the other one is actually in New Mexico. And that's their recently acquired. They did a Pecos acquisition, and then just recently, the Silverback bolted right onto that. That acreage is like right mixed in with the acres they already had. So it gives them a bunch of running room in there. They're really excited about it. And it looks like 100, more than 100 low risk horizontal drilling locations. The only, kind of negative I had on the company was I didn't see that it had a lot of running room. Well, now it does. Now it's got a lot of running room. And, running room, if it's in the middle of nowhere, doesn't mean much. But when you have a whole bunch of development drilling locations, this is the same true for InPlay. A whole bunch of development in an area that you're already operating in. You don't have to add a lot of people. You don't have to open new offices or anything. You already have your people there and your infrastructure there. That's the best kind of development drilling inventory you want to have. And so they got it in. And this company, for some reason, its size, it just doesn't get hardly any analyst coverage. There's only like two or three analysts that cover this thing. And you got a company here pushing 40,000 BOE per day of production and doesn't get much coverage. It's kind of weird. But we like it. Pays a nice dividend. It's like 5.7% dividend yield right now. I see no reason they're going to cut the dividend, and they're going to have a very, very strong third quarter results to tell the market. So.
Dan, to be honest with you, comparing this to InPlay, looking at its production profile, okay, double the production profile, but its market cap right now is already 600 million US. So it's a much higher, more than double the market cap of InPlay. It pays a lower dividend, about just under 6%. So do you just see the growth is driving this much higher? Because your current valuation I'm seeing of around $48, this pushes it into a drastically different company or drastically different world than InPlay with double the production. Fine, but that would be triple the market cap.
Yeah, but and it's a very profitable company. Right now, I would say I like InPlay better. I'm just saying from a timing standpoint, I think when they announce their third quarter results, it's going to get a nice pop, especially if oil prices rebound. The thing is out there too that the gas prices are so terrible out west in their part of the Permian because they don't have enough pipeline access. They are actually have a power business. They're building their own gas-fired power plant using their produced gas. It was selling for like 50 cents. They're going to now turn it into electricity to run their pumps and eventually make enough electricity to sell into the grid. And I kind of like that deal. Now they have a lot fewer shares. They only have 22 million shares of stock. So the per share results, I mean, this is how profitable it's been. In 2022, their reported net income $5.85. Then it went to 5.47 the next year. 414 in 2023, and now 471. First Call's net income per share forecast is $5. You know, a very, very profitable company and generating $9 to $10 of operating cash flow. But their strong production growth in 2022, 33% year-over-year production growth. Then the Pecos acquisition, 61% year-over-year production growth. Then 21%, pretty much with the drill bit. 21.5% this year, plus the acquisition Silverback, and just on a very conservative production forecast for 2026, they'll have another 16% production growth. So, during this whole time, they've been paying pretty good dividends. So it's not like they're just plowing all the money back into the ground for growth. Their shareholders are getting, you know, nice returns and getting growth, and you know, they're per share production just keeps going up, and that should be the driver of the share price.
Well, Dan, one other company that's also done a transformative transaction and is also growing on a per share basis, so same kind of theme as the other two here, is we saw just this week the combination of Viper Energy and Sitio Royalties. We've talked about both those companies with you in the past, and Viper Energy traded on the NASDAQ under the ticker VNOM. They're a subsidiary of Diamondback Energy, which we've also talked to you about a couple of times. They're traded on the NASDAQ under the ticker FANG. So you got that snake theme there between the two companies. But with Sitio, they're not related to Diamondback in any way. So they're bringing in, Viper is bringing in all of their royalties and mineral products, and they've revised their third quarter guidance now. But this looks like a company that's continued to be in a weak position along with the oil price, even though they're building more and more value underneath the surface and they've got strong operators. So be curious to get your thoughts on these two companies tying the knot just this last week.
Yeah, I love this deal. I did own both companies. So I owned Sitio SDR that deal just closed on the 19th. So it's just getting closed. But everybody, you know, these were two big publicly traded minerals companies, and they're just minerals and royalties. So they have no drilling risk. So these companies deserve to trade at much higher multiples than the operating companies that do have drilling risk. Now they do have commodity price risk, but you know, they've gone from, you know, in 2022, Viper's production was 33,600 BOE per day. Their production today is 100 or about 125,000 BOE per day. Their oil production, 66,000 BOE per day. I love this company. And this to me is a must-own company for any hedge fund, any mutual fund that considers itself a growth and income fund. They're not going to find a better company than this. And like I said, you know, Riley and even InPlay to some extent doesn't have all that much analyst coverage. This one has all the analysts covered in, and they love this company. These days, it's almost impossible to find an upstream energy oil and gas company that has 100% of the analysts have a buy or strong buy recommendation on the company. And that's the case for Viper. They love the company. And it's the relationship with Diamondback, because Diamondback is an aggressive driller. They have a lot of their rigs running on minerals that are owned by Viper already. And now with the Sitio merger, there's going to be even more of them doing that. So that locks in production growth year after year after year. I mean, they run like a dozen rigs on their minerals. So they're completing, wells every month, adding more production to Viper. So just continuous growth. Now, the one thing I do like about it, I think should get a pop here. They said they're now paying out 75% of their operating cash flow or distributable cash flow, and they don't really have any CapEx requirements. So their operating cash flow is like 90% free cash flow. And so they're paying out 75% of that, the other 25% to pay down debt. Now, when they get their debt down to their goal, which it should happen in the next year, then they're going to be paying out 100% of their distributed cash flow in the form of dividends. They pay a fixed dividend and a variable dividend. The last one was 53 cents. Due to this merger, I think the quarterly dividend is going to go over 70 cents. So that's going to increase their yield. And they're going to have a really, really strong balance sheet at the end of the year. I mean, this company's super strong. And only about 40% of their minerals are actually developed. So they have got a ton of running room in just what they own. And because of their size and their access to capital, they're the go-to buyer for if anybody or a family or something out there wants to sell their minerals, they're going to, check in with Viper to see what kind of deal they can get. And they've got teams out there kind of looking to buy minerals all the time. So they're continuing to grow. Now, Sitio does own, this is Viper's been pretty much a Permian Basin company. Sitio owns a lot of acreage outside of the Permian, minerals outside of the Permian. So maybe they'll sell off some of that stuff and use that money to pay down the debt faster. But the sooner they get their debt down to their goal, and I think it's $1.5 billion in debt, when they get that low, then they're going to pay out 100%. So that'll be a nice dividend pop here probably next year.
Dan, any idea why the stock has dropped so much since December? It's down about 35%.
Yeah, just the oil price being down. It's heavily weighted to oil. Even though their production mix is like 52% oil, 26% natural gas, and 22% NGLs, 85, 90% of their revenue is oil sales. So with the oil price being down, and there's been some confusion with the deal, but when was it going to close and everything. And I don't know, the Wall Street gang always, when they look at these deals, until they actually see a full quarter of results, they kind of assume that these guys always overpay. There's no way these guys overpaid for anything. They're too strong. And they have access to all the research guys over at Diamondback too. So, it's kind of like Diamondback really runs this company.
Okay. Hey, Dan, always insightful looking at the energy sector, even as it is in a bit of a downtrend right now. But you've given us food for thought of why that might rebound or correct itself really in the near term, but especially into next year. And number of companies, still a lot of M&A happening in the sector. It's something to watch as more quarterly reports come out, especially through Q3 and potential still revaluations in a lot of these stocks. Everyone, that wraps up this weekend show. Hope you enjoyed this weekend show and very thankful that you took some time out of your weekend to join us on the KE Report. Please go back through our website, podcast, YouTube channel, and Substack account. Just search the KE Report. We add a lot of company updates from throughout the week, as well as some market commentary covering some of the day-to-day moves of markets that have slowed down a little bit, but it is the end of summer. Get ready for everyone to get back at their desk in really just a couple of weeks' time. Dan, thanks for your time, and everyone, again, thanks for tuning in with us this weekend.
The Cortland Economics Report is produced for A.B. Cortland and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Cortland, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Cortland Economics Report.